토 아라하토 삼마 삼부다사 나모 타사 바가바토 아라하토 삼마 삼부다사 부탕 담망 상카는 사 Would have been nice, but I have my own retreat going on in Ottawa, kind of. But from what everyone has said to me, it seems to have been there's still 2 weeks left, but it seems to be a very profitable time. And Ajahn Khuswo has given a lot of space for people to experiment and try things out, and that always requires a lot of maturity. To be able to be self-motivated, to know when to create structure, not to have structure, to explore one's own mind in whatever way one wants to. And this is the one of the beautiful things about a monastery. There is a chance for, I think, quite a mature level of practice, where there isn't a lot of encouragement in terms of words and language and pointing of fingers and that kind of thing. So all of us have been at this for quite a long time. And one of the things that seems to come up when I talk with people or when I look at my own mind is the difference between me being someone who's practicing awareness, or me being someone who is aware of my mind, this sort of sense of strong sense of me doing the work, and the mind becoming empty of that sense of me, and there just is the way things are. Experience of a mind which is empty of this self-reference, this constant self-reference. I study, and there's a strong sense of me doing something to go somewhere, or just in terms of effort, I have to make effort, or what some kind of psychological material you're faced with. You think, well, I've got a lot of this kind of a problem. I have a lot of fear problem. I have a lot of sleepy problem. I have a lot of anger problem. And so the sense of I is very, very powerful, obviously, very, very insidious. But the way of awakening is not, again, it's not like something you become, it's something that you notice. You notice it when you sneeze. You know, maybe your mind is struggling with something, and then you just sneeze, and you notice, oh, this is the way it is now, or at the end of a thought, mind is planning something, and then there's a sound, and all of a sudden, just that. And in that moment of awakening, I think the operative word is desirelessness, because self and tanha are synonymous, aren't they? Are they? In Paticca Samuppada, passa Vedana, Tanha, Upadana, Bhava. Passa, contact. Vedana, feeling. Tanha, craving. Upadana, attachment. And what is attachment? It's that sense of me going somewhere, doing something, or me, whatever. And then the whole train of that. So Tanha, Upadana, Bhava. Tanha, Upadana, Bhava. And that understanding that craving and self are really where the problem lies, and the capacity to see into that and to see the mind empty of that, even in a glimmer, is not a becoming. It's not something that you become, it's something that you notice. So the operative word is desirelessness. So if even for the whole sitting the mind is busy and then the bell rings and you awaken to all the busyness of thought and just awaken and just be that, just notice that, nowhere to go, nothing to become. And this is hard to do because the sense of effort for us is so much organized around becoming something or getting something or getting rid of something or figuring something out or understanding something or whatever it might be. And there's nothing wrong with becoming a better person and so on, but the entry into the real peace of the heart is through the emptiness of that sense of self. So it's not something you get rid of, it's something you just notice. So see, like when there's a strong sense of self, there's also a strong sense of desire. If you're very, very, the kind of extremes of our mind are interesting to watch. If you're very nervous about something, very fearful of some future event, or you're very worried about some outcome that might not be good, strong sense of I, isn't it? Strong sense of I. If there's something you really want, something you really would like to own, or someone you want to be with, or strong sense of I. If there's a strong, if you've had a strong argument with someone, and you feel hurt, or you feel you've hurt them, strong sense of I. So the curious thing about effort is that you can make strong effort. If you're sleepy, you can really stretch out your spine, and breathe deeply, you can do all of that. It's not that right effort is just a sort of totally passive. You can be active, but it's not with a sense of becoming. It's more like if you're really feeling dull and sleepy, then you've really got to do something. So there's the sense of I have to do something about sleepiness, right? And something is done, but it's always from this perspective of sustaining awakeness, rather than becoming someone who doesn't have a sleepy problem. Sustaining awakeness. Same with fear or anger, desire, lust or greed or whatever it might be. And this is a kind of, it's more like a connection to life rather than a reorganizing of life. If I feel quite self-critical, how do I really connect to the feeling of self-criticism? I actually have to drop the thinking of self. I have to say, well, what's that really like? And that's awakening to it, letting it come in, receptive to it. This is the language I like. Whereas the mind, which is forever organizing and trying to become and trying to get rid of, is never really with the moment. It's with the idea of what should or shouldn't be. So all these ideas about like instant enlightenment or whatever, they make sense in terms of instant awakening. So once you see that gap, or once you notice that, once you appreciate that, or you understand that, I think understanding is important, then the question is how can you sustain that? Or how can you maintain that? How can you maintain that quality of presence and awakeness? So we say you practice mindfulness. But then mindfulness can be this kind of tight attempt to control everything. So I think of it like in photography. I like the idea of a kind of a wide angle lens where you have a width of perception which can see things come and go, and the mind abides in that silent, empty knowing. And then there's the grasping. It's like a microscope just focuses in on something, and then the mind is caught in thought, caught in self-perceptions, caught in ideas and so on and so forth. But somewhere in that kind, in that scenario of attachment, scenario of self, there is a gap. Something breaks it up. Something causes cessation. So there's a cessation of the sense of I, right? Which isn't the death of you, but it's the ending of that particular cycle of craving, cycle of self, right? That comes to an end. And actually knowing that and appreciating that and opening to that and operating from desirelessness. If you have some kind of language which can help in remembering desirelessness, because when I use that word myself, desirelessness, it really is a word of not self, desirelessness, because there's no becoming in that word. There's nothing that I have to do or become or get rid of or figure out or analyze or attain. All that falls away in desirelessness. So do you have a kind of language of emptiness? A language of where in the formal structures of Paticca Samuppada, Passa, Vedana, Tanha, Upadana, Bhava, where that is broken up. Because that's the gap between Vedana, Tanha, Upadana. That's the gap. That's the formal way of talking about that. But do you have a kind of language which reminds you of that awakening, noticing the space, noticing the gap, and the language which helps you to operate from that, helps you to remember that, helps you to appreciate that. Language like, when there is awakening, say, just to say, this is it, nowhere else to go. Fine. You know, some kind of a language which reminds you of the perfection of that moment. Because really, that's all there is. There really is nothing to go for, because we're not going for the change of a personality. We're not here to create better personalities. I think better personalities arise from this. We're not here to create worse personalities either. We're not here to create personalities. So what we do as we observe and practice and live this life is we see how personality view does in fact arise, don't we, each of us? How it arises in terms of our own self-critical faculty maybe, or how it arises in terms of comparison, how it arises in terms of judgments, how it arises in terms of memory, what I've done, how it arises in terms of where I'm going to be and what's going to happen. All these different ways where the self-sense arises. And to awaken to that and not really need to do anything, just to see that cease. So cessation has to be realized, Third Noble Truth. And that can sound like some final product of cessation. So there's some great cessation later down the road where I don't feel anything or whatever, but actually a little cessation. Where you're you feel annoyed with someone because they forgot to replace the toilet paper or something. It doesn't be quite trivial, but how the sense of I then starts to generate. Why aren't they more careful? And da 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 da. So the sense of self is also the sense of I. Sense of other is all the sense of self, isn't it? It's me criticizing them, and then awakening to that, and just waiting and noticing and feeling, what's that really like? Waiting it out, not having to fix it, not going anywhere with it. And this is the value of monastic life. We have a lot of time for this strange work, but actually, like letting it really flower in its fullness, trusting in awareness. You don't have to fix it. Don't believe in it also. Just know it. And then in that cessation, that's the end of self. Why? Because craving has ceased too. So you're in charge of, like, monasteries are always, like a big monastery like that, if someone's in charge of the kitchen, someone's in charge of the workshop, someone's in charge of the office, or many people are in charge of these places, and we'd always get these discourses in a morning meeting, not always, but sometimes the poor, let's say the poor old person in charge of the workshop, right? That's just, once again, gives a lecture on don't dump your tools in the workshop. Don't use chisels for screwdrivers. Put the lids back onto the paint cans, they dry out. Everyone just dumps their stuff and they're left with it, right? So that's valid. those kinds of talks are valid. But you can imagine that person has maybe just cleaned the workshop. Like Amaravati has a big workshop and a lot of people use it. They come into the workshop, right? They've just sharpened the chisel, say, cleaned up the paint shop, got everything ordered, swept the floor, and they see there's a chisel been used as a screwdriver. Sawdust everywhere, people have dumped paint. The first thought's going to be in their mind, it's going to be murderous. I'm going to kill someone. And certainly, in terms of social responsibility, something needs to be said, right? So we have in bigger monasteries, you get a lot of talks like that. Smaller monasteries, less so, but... So that's valid, but within that, the person who's in charge of the workshop, that's their practice. You don't stick it to them in their face during the morning meeting and say, well, that's your practice. Because you might get done by their chisel. But you can see, if they walk into the workshop, right, what's going to first thing, passa, contact, eye contact. Screwdriver has been used. Chisel has been used as a screwdriver. Paint top is off. Paint has dried out. Right, so that's contact. Eye contact. That's passa. And with passa there is feeling. And the feeling in this case is not terribly joyous. The first, it's a feeling of, oh no. Why? Because of all the person's put a lot of effort into it and so on. So from passa you get vedana. And from Vedana you get Tanha. And the desire is to not have the workshop this way. And from that Tanha, or that whole scenario, the sense of self arises. Those idiots, and I've worked so hard, and I'm disrobing, I'm out of here, I can't live community life. So the sense of I arises with all the heat and the anger and everyone, and it's quite justified. Murder isn't justified. But you can see, but still it's suffering. It's still suffering. And those kind of gross examples are very obvious how the sense of self arises. And then the bhava. Then the bhava, and then the thinking, I'm going to give a talk tomorrow. I'm not going to do this. Someone else is going to do this. I don't want to. It's just going on. And so on and so forth. And that's birth and suffering. Right? Now, when the heart is very... impacted like that in a way that causes a lot of heat and agitation, then the kilesa, the asava, the outflow of ignorance or anger, say maybe in this case, is very, very powerful, or could be very powerful if the person is very equanimous and saintly. They say, oh, may my brothers and sisters in the holy life be happy. But that's quite an attainment. So there's a lot of energy now in this scenario. So if the person then says, believes in that energy and then hates everyone, they know that's not going to work. But if they think they shouldn't feel this uprush, well, what are they going to do with it? Just feel guilty about it? Right? So the middle way is not to go to bhava. Not to go to the whole sense of self, and so we say, drop the story and go to the feeling, obviously. And so there you can see some cessation. You can see cessation of the storyline. You don't see cessation of the heat and the energy and the anger and the frustration that's kind of been conditioned because of a certain desire to have things a certain way in all the work the person's done. But you can see the sense of self ceasing. Right? There is that. You can see the energy. You can see you're trying to create a storyline around it. You say, yeah, but this is the way it is. And he's still, you know, there's still tension and that. But there's no creation of sense of self. And that's a big step. Right? So you notice cessation. And if you think cessation is like all of a sudden that energy and aversion is going to end, then you're very disappointed. Well, you know, it's not working. That's not the way it works. It doesn't work that way. So what happens when the person experiences the heat and the anger, and the mind keeps wanting to do that, right? It wants to create a sense, it wants to blame. It doesn't want this. It doesn't want this feeling. It wants to hate someone and blame someone. It was, you're doing this to me, and so on and so forth. But the responsible practitioner still, you know, might say, okay, I've got to say something. I've got to train these people, or, you know, I've got to offer some reflection to the community. That's fine. That can be quite skillful thinking, but the aversion, the sense of self, as that language is dropped, then what happens? Then there's real connection with this raw feeling. This real, that's what awareness is about. It's no longer distanced by thought, but it's actually connected to the very raw feeling. And that raw feeling is one that is the desire mind doesn't want. You know, I don't want this raw feeling of suffering. And so I keep looking for an escape. So I go to blame or whatever it might be. So returning to the rawness of this experience is a way of dropping tanha. Right? The tanha is pushing me away. I don't want this. I don't want this ugly experience. I don't want this pain. So the person stays with the raw experience, and then the second kind of aspect of cessation begins to be noticed, is that the strength of anger, the strength of this heat, the power of this begins to dissipate. Not only in this moment, but in future moments, because one has sustained an awakeness around that and has seen it as an object rather than being a subject. Being kind of lost in it. So that's a kind of second aspect of cessation, where the power of delusion and asava and all that begins to lessen and weaken. The other way of attachment, like towards the positive, you know, someone is living in the monastery and they feel very lonely and they feel very bored, and they make contact with someone and they fall in love with them. Another man or another woman or whatever. And then the heart feels attracted. You know, something I want. Something one is drawn towards. And then a strong sense of self too comes up, isn't it? Same thing. You know, one is repelling me, the other is attracting. But it's still what arises is a strong sense of self in other. So attraction to a human being, it might be a mixture of sexual and emotional and all kinds of things, but it's, you know, it's a very strong, powerful pull, a feeling. But strong sense of self. So if one is practicing to realize the deathless, then the realization, well, I cannot find that in another person, it can't be possible. So there's that deeper realization, this can't be it. Although the emotional sense is this is it. That's the delusion. So the understanding or the aspiration to the deathless has a sense of perspective on it. So one takes responsibility for that, doesn't just follow that energy, and begins to drop the storyline. Same thing. So the storyline is there, I'd like to be with this person, and one of this person, or there's that person's samples, or I wonder if that person's coming to them, and the whole mind, no, drop that. But then the feeling's still there, the yearning, the love, the sexual attraction, whatever it is, it's still there. But that first part of cessation has been realized. So that the storyline, as the mind wants to go to that, no, what's it like? Awakening. Now, this isn't so. It's the effort isn't to get rid of this and to say one shouldn't feel this, but to say what's it really like? What is this feeling really like? So you see the cessation of the storyline, but it keeps coming back, doesn't it? Whether it's the anger or the infatuation, it keeps trying to grab your mind, because that's tanha. Tanha is an active force which keeps trying to take birth, doesn't it? Trying to take birth in negative or positive ways. So the awakened mind is not a self mind. The awakened mind knows self as object, knows I as object. So that sense of cessation is noticed more and more, there's the raw feeling again. And there's the raw feeling. And now that being with that raw feeling, you don't want to be with that raw. You want if it's infatuation, you want the seeming fulfillment of that feeling. With the anger, you don't want the anger. You don't want that, so you blame, you hate. Infatuation, you don't want unfulfilled infatuation or an unfulfilled love or sexual desire. You want to fulfill that, so you want to follow it. Right? But it's the same thing. It's the same thing. So one sits with the raw energy of infatuation or attraction in some way. And then if one's very patient and trustful, then that begins to cease. And as these two aspects begin to cease, then that the silence and emptiness of the mind is noticed more and more. But even within knowing the rawness of strong feelings, you still notice there's the empty yourself. Because there isn't someone trying to do something about this, trying to become a person who is whatever. There is simply awakeness to raw feeling. Doubt, you look at how intellectually we like to know, and we like to have, most of us are, I think all of us are pretty right. But the one who isn't, please put up my hand. We're all, we're intelligent people, and we have a love of knowing. We enjoy knowing, and we get certain confidence in having ideas that tell us how to do things, how to run a computer or drive a car or cook a good soup or whatever it is. And these are good things, right? And so sometimes but doubt sometimes doesn't have an answer, or doubt can just be a mood, and that's uncomfortable. That's uncomfortable. That's uncomfortable. And so the craving mind wants an answer. Craving mind wants an answer. So then we sometimes, we read books and we make questions, and then we get an answer, and then we get another question. That's why doubt as a hindrance, of one of the five hindrances, doubt is very insidious, because it's harder to see, I think. I think it's harder to see. And the mind can just be mulling over doubts, and I don't know if this is right, and kind of very low level, whereas passion is very obvious. It's kind of raw and strong. You see that. Whereas doubt can just be this kind of gray thinking all the time. But it still has a sense of self in it. I think it's more difficult to notice, but it still has a sense of self. And it's about me, and I'm not being sure, and where am I going, and am I doing my practice right? And again, that has to be awakened to. So then, the awakening to that is that part of cessation, where the storyline is drawn, that sense of self. But then the kind of not being sure mood has to be also witnessed to. Not being, and the craving mind then wants an answer. Wants confirmation, whatever. Same thing. You just have to bear witness to it. Dullness. You look at, dullness really gets you into self-view. If you look at when the mind is sleepy, the mind is just off into gaga land. Fantasizing and, doing a little number. All just in thought. And that's all very self-sense. Strong self-sense. It doesn't have much power. It's a lot easier to notice anger than sleepiness. The sleepiness, you're asleep. So with dullness, you have to somehow figure out how to make effort so that the cessation of self can be noticed. So, like, if you're really dull and you're like this, kind of lolling around, you can't just say, "Oh, I'm going to notice a sense of self now." It doesn't work. So you have to be quite, you have to use quite a lot of vitality. But that's fine. Vitality's great. But it's not with becoming. It's simply to notice the cessation of the self sense. So as you do that, like, so you do some pranayama, or you really use your spine a lot, or there's different ways that we operate with that. Sit on the edge of a well, as Ajahn Chah would say. Walk backwards on your Dzogchen path. But then, of course, as you energize the whole system, then what you notice is the sense of self. How does it arise? It arises through body crumpling. Right? So the first step in noticing the end of a self scenario dullness is through body awareness. And then, you know, the body wants to do this, but as it wants to do that, it also wants to think, go off into fantasy land. And then you have the rawness of dullness. And what is the rawness of dullness? Well, it's just not, I don't really like it. Imagine it's just always crumpling the energy and so on. But so as you just notice what that energy form is like, and you know, and you learn how to balance it, it's not becoming. You're not trying to get rid of it, and that is the problem with dullness. If people try to get rid of it, or they just believe in it and they're just dull all the time. Not all the time, but when it comes. So you figure out how, just as you can figure out how to be with, a lustful state of consciousness. If you notice a lustful state of consciousness, and just stay in your body. Don't go to fantasies and all the indulgence of thought. Then it'll just run through the body. Not a problem. But if you go to thought and fantasy, or you reject it, it's a problem. So the body is a kind of monitor of lustful energies, but it's also a monitor of dullness. Just as dullness can kind of take you away, as you learn about dullness in the body, just as you can learn about anger in the body, you can learn about lust in the body, you can learn about dullness in the body, that's without the sense of I. And there's a kind of familiarity with these energies. Oh, okay, know that one. And you know that one, it's just lust, and it's dullness, and it's anger, and it's just the way it is. No problem. Not a judgment around it, or no need to get rid of it, but it's known. And then the knowing, again and again and again, it becomes, one realizes the profundity of knowing. Not in like me knowing something, but just this mysterious silence of the mind. So there isn't an a guy operating all the time trying to figure these things out. It's a hard thing to explain, because the whole language of effort is around me doing something, right? And there is that. There is a sense of me doing something, but it's not a becoming. So that sense of me doing something becomes less and less and less. Then the final question is, well, who's even doing that? And the grosser parts of the obsessions of mind are addressed, and the more they cease in consciousness, the more refined the effort is, and the more the question becomes around will and self doing something to become something. It becomes more and more a receptive vibrancy to the mind, to consciousness, rather than. And any effort you make becomes more and more obvious if it's with tanha, with becoming. I think it takes a lot of faith and trust, especially if the energies are very raw. So I always say that, don't I? What do you trust in? What's your faith? Is it in me doing something to become something, or is it in desirelessness? All right, something to ponder. Andamayam namakataya sadhukaram dharamase.